this is The Thing About Cars. Welcome. I am Mickey Desai. Around the table, we have a full house today, starting with Dave. Are you there?
I am here.
I see Dave, but I don't quite see Becca. Becca, are you really there?
No, I'm just a ghost of my former self.
You're an AI today. Okay.
I got am. It.
Our old friend Leanne Patterson joins us at the table today. Leanne, how are you?
Just fine. Thanks for having me back.
Yes, good to see you. Ben.
Hey, I'm here.
Ben's there. And last but certainly not least is Dawn.
Here.
Wearing a very Greek t-shirt today. Should we talk about your t-shirt, Dawn?
No, we don't need to talk about my t-shirt.
You know, 'cause I can barely read Greek. I can't even say gamma anymore. Anyway. All right. So
now we're here to talk about cars. Let's talk about cars.
We can talk about cars.
Well, I don't know. We just had a Greek alphabet of hurricanes, and Hurricane Zeta came up this way.
Well, let me ask this then, as long as we're on the subject of Greece, are there any Greek automakers?
Not that I'm aware of, but I was thinking about that. But with a little more research, I might be able to find something of interest.
Yeah.
I don't think we've ever had a driver at the Speedway from Greece either.
Mm-mm. No, I can't think of one either. But so... anyway, we'll dig up some trivia on that later. Before we properly introduce Leanne, I wanted to get our grand trivia auto question out in the open. So I have a question which I think I've asked before. So this is not the question for the day. I'm just going to ask this to make sure that I, in fact, I can delete it because the question, well, because I think we've used it. The question is, what car maker's name is a verb followed by the noun that is the projectile that, when shot, causes that verb?
I don't think you've asked that before.
No?
Obviously Dodge.
My husband would be so upset.
Or would that be Dodge Ram?
Ooh, that's good. That's very good. That's a potential answer. Hmm. But no, the answer that these guys had in mind was Pierce Arrow.
Oh, wow.
That way back.
Dig back for that, yes.
Those Packers didn't work either, huh?
No. No, but Pierce Arrow is the whole name, whereas Dodge Ram is not the whole name of the company, right? It's just Dodge.
But if you can't dodge really, it, ram it.
I should have even got that because I actually have an article up on Pierce Arrow for some research I was doing for another show.
Well, very cool.
Wow. Yeah.
All right, so the official question for today is, wait a minute, you're doing another show about cars?
No, I'm talking about for one of our shows. Yeah,
I was going to be like, we're jealous, man.
Yes, I am,
did you feel cheated on?
Yeah, I am cheating on you with another podcast. I didn't want it to come out publicly like this, but we might as well talk about it now. I'm not feeling fulfilled.
Oh, no.
Would a threesome help?
Draw up papers. Oh, no.
We could do the podcast threesome. We could just host each other. All right. So the official question for today is, how many Land Cruisers did Toyota sell in its first year in America? That's Toyota's first year in America, I think. I think that's Toyota's first year, not just Land Cruiser's first year. So how many Land Cruisers did Toyota sell in its first year in America? Choices are 128, 1,287, 12,874, or one. That's the statistical outlier there.
I think you're leading the witness.
Yeah, it could be. It could be. But I thought this was a fun question to put on the table for today, which takes us to our first full segment of the day, introducing Ben and that new car smell. Ben, what have you got for us?
New cars are not really moving right now.
They're not?
No, with the whole COVID situation, the economic slowdown resulting, new car sales are pretty weak at the moment. And what this is causing, and we've seen this before, this is causing a lot of strength in the used car market. Because as fewer people can afford new ones, but still need to replace cars, they're looking for something, you know, a little bit lower price. So they're turning to the used market. Used prices are up. The demand is up. So, you know, if you are wanting to get a new car, it's a good time to, because not only is demand low, but it's the end of the year too. So those two factors could make you a pretty good deal. Mm-hmm. But if you're, you know, still in a used car or still driving one or looking for one, do not despair. You know, I saw a sign on a used car lot down in Texas a couple of years ago that said, remember, everyone drives a used car. And you know, that has kind of stuck with me. you know, if used car smell is good enough for you, then by all means, go for it. But be aware that prices are high right now. Demand is high. So you will have competition in the market.
So maybe that makes sense, you know, to start looking at new cars again. I mean, there are certain disadvantages to going to new cars again. Sure. Dave, did I see you were shaking your head? Did I see a reaction there?
Not necessarily to what you were saying per se, is actually because we're going to talk a little bit about this when we get to the letter section.
Oh, yes.
I've got just about 75 tabs open on my spare screen, and I'm finding it's one of them just flashed at me. I'm like, stop, you know, I don't need car ads in the corner of my eye. And it's like, I'm in danger of having a seizure here.
Oh yeah, no, we can't have that. But make for an interesting episode, that's for sure. So Ben, you can buy the new car smell in a bottle, can't you?
Yeah, I've never tried it. I don't know how faithful it is or what brand it more resembles. But yeah, you can. They make that kind of thing. Even I think those little pine tree air fresheners might.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, there's a new car smell air freshener too.
Yeah, and what the smell of a new car generally is really is essentially just the chemicals that off gas from all the plastics.
I was going to say, isn't it glues. Just, yeah,
outgassing. Yeah, it's, you know, volatile chemical residues coming out of all the materials. It's not something you necessarily want to breathe concentrated doses of, but, you know, it's pretty nice to experience it.
They actually recommend that you roll down the windows and not breathe it in until the new car smell goes away, because it is. It's adhesives you know, dyes from the interior and whatnot, and not necessarily something good to be inhaling.
So you don't want to like wear it as a cologne, put a little behind your ears, a little on your wrists, and go out in the evening?
I can speak firsthand. It was a bad idea.
But that's probably a manufactured new car smell as opposed to the actual glues and things.
But burned rubber is awesome. The guys love that.
That's great.
See, here I was just rubbing on bacon.
Oh, Dakar.
So this Ben's observation here points us in two different directions. One is we've sort of already covered it. If the rising price of used cars is too much, then it may make sense to get a new car. But the other side is if the demand for used cars is really that stiff, then should there be more guidelines on what to look for in a new in a used car? And should we talk about that?
Well, I would say just be even more cautious since you may be paying more. You want to make damn sure that you're not getting suckered.
Right. And the easiest way to do that is to get the car evaluated by a professional.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right.
So what else is stiff, Mickey?
At the moment? I'm in dire need of a muscle relaxer. Does that answer your question?
It was an interesting adjective.
Yes.
I've got some muscle relaxers. You need some?
Yes. When can I come over?
Nothing makes the day go faster like vodka and Vicodin.
Yeah. I was going to say this episode suddenly took a weird turn.
Yeah. I'm not, a little helper.
I'm not really sure what to do about that. Leanne, how are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Yeah, life is good. I actually now live in Auburn, Alabama. I've moved to my home of Atlanta, Georgia. So the small town living is fantastic.
War chicken. Huh? What was that? I said war chicken. War chicken.
You know, you guys can't even spell dog.
Yowzer.
That's good. Leanne, there's a number of things I want to ask you. We've changed the show a little bit. This is your second appearance on the show, and it really is good to see you again.
Well, thank you.
The question I want to ask you is sort of an unpopular opinion question, because we know of your history in NASCAR, unless we should talk about that again, since it's been a while. I know you were talking to the guys about that. And any recent news in the world of NASCAR or racing in general that you want to talk about?
Well, it was certainly good to see our Georgia boy bring home the championship. You know, yes. The championship was fantastic. And mm-hmm. If you didn't know, there were thousands of people up in Dawsonville on Monday. And he had one of his race cars and he drove it out of the shop, went down and did burnouts on the courthouse square right next to the pool hall, and then drove it down toward down the street to the Georgia Motorsports Hall of Fame, which also houses Bill's Moonshine Distillery.
Oh, yeah.
They're in the same building, but thousands of people literally came out. And he made the statement he wasn't sure of any other NASCAR driver that would ever have gone home to a reception like that. And I think that's a true statement.
Wow.
That was phenomenal.
It must have been very exciting.
Yeah, it was a great day for the Elliotts in general. One of my favorite posts that NASCAR did this week was Bill hugging Chase, and it said, "A champion hugs a champion, a father hugs a son." And I thought that was great.
That is fantastic.
Yeah.
So my possibly unpopular opinion question for you is, or my, it's just a statement, let's discuss it. Do you think NASCAR would be any more entertaining if they still raced production model cars instead of these, you know, race cars?
You know, I'm going to take a page out of My Cousin Vinny and say it's a BS question.
Okay.
Because really, when you look at what NASCAR has done, if you went back to, quote, production cars now, first off, you couldn't even race production cars because they're not made out of stuff that would handle it. I mean, stuff that we ran back in the 70s was steel, and it was kind of bulletproof, and they could rub on each other. You put a regular production out there car today, and it's, even though they'll tell you that the metal in the cars is the same metal that's out on the highway, it's like, no, there's too much plastic, there's too much fragility. You really can't do what they used to do, where they would actually take production cars, put roll cages in them, you know, carve a section out of the swing set because they needed extra roll bar and put it in. And yes, I've seen it done.
So those 5 mile bumpers from the 70s just didn't do it.
Yeah, it just wasn't going to happen that way. And I think the thing that people miss, and they miss it at IndyCar too, is that half the story used to be the evolution of the technology. And if you go back, and they certainly did this in the pandemic when they were trying to come up with things to air. They had a beautiful piece about Davey Allison when he was running for the championship, and he was going up against Bill and I think Kawica at the time. And the footage back then, you go, oh my gosh, you forgot how exciting it frankly was, because these guys were banging doors and getting on each other. They were really, you could see that veracity, but they weren't doing it at, you know, 190 miles an hour. Of course, Talladega was at 200. But the other factor is that the technology that you see evolving now, you don't actually see. The fans don't see that McLaren is now the EFI systems in all of NASCAR. I still don't quite get that one, except there is a big IndyCar influence into the NASCAR competitive mode. There's a lot of people, several guys that used to be in Penske's organization are now in the rules committee down there. And so they've done those things, but we're missing that story in racing all the way across the board. We're missing the evolution of the technology. So if you just went back to the production cars today to answer your question, it really wouldn't change the racing, because one, it has gotten safer. We're not losing guys like we used to. And that's important. I mean, we don't have anybody from the Petty family currently running because we lost Adam. Okay. So that's a big factor. And two, you miss out on all that evolution of technology, that you would still just be kind of putting the same thing on track that we have, because the aero package in the new cars are better than they used to be in the 70s. A lot of things about the new cars have evolved that would make that racing kind of what you have today. I don't think it would change a whole lot. And I think what the fans miss is they don't have the full understanding of the nuances that are coming into this package, because it's not as obvious as bodywork. And you don't really see the things that make it difficult for the guys. When you're running around an oval, a lot of fans don't understand that those guys are chasing those cars every single lap, every single stage, whether it's pushing, pulling, the track conditions, the air conditions, whether their car's given away. And, you know, when Bill Elliott told me one day that he could, in fact, feel a quarter round of winch in his butt, you know, you're like, oh my gosh, but they can, and they are absolutely chasing those cars through the race. So they're not bored.
I always wondered that. It's like, if you're going around the track sniffing someone else's tailpipe, what's the excitement? And then you're right, that's the nuance of it, isn't it?
It's all the nuances of it. I mean, you know, when you're actually looking at that and you're feeling it, you've got 30 other guys around you, and that air movement and the sound, I mean, it's intense, not to mention the heat. You know, a lot of those guys on a hot day, it's 140 degrees, 150 degrees inside that cockpit. They are not bored.
Wow.
And so most people haven't experienced that. How would they? And that's something that a long time ago, everybody felt like racing was approachable because everybody's driven a car, right? I mean, you've driven the car that the guy in theory is racing out there. But that's just in theory. And so it's real hard for people to actually put themselves in the seat today of what the guys are actually doing today. And so I actually don't think it'd change much. Is that an unpopular answer?
Yeah. I think that's a fantastic answer. Ben, do you have a thought on the matter?
Well, I do. And I think it's one of those things that could go multiple ways and really kind of depends on your definitions. If you changed nothing else, if you put production cars in, but everything else remained the same, it would be boring as hell. And I think one of the reasons is because the tracks are huge and the production cars don't go fast enough to look like they're doing anything there. But if you put it on a smaller course, and it still might be boring for the live audience, but on a smaller course with some interesting camera work, it could make for some very exciting television.
So Bristol's going to be dirt next year.
Oh, wow.
Bristol's going to actually, they're going to put a bunch of dirt in Bristol and they're going to put the Cup Boys back on dirt. But the thing is, if you go to late model racing now, that's exactly what you're seeing. And late model racing, just, you know, all those races are selling out. They're absolutely packed and they've been packed all summer because they were doing protest races. It happens to be around a racetrack and a race is happening tonight, but they're still packing those out because those guys are door banging. They are running into each other. They are spinning out. It is. And you can see the intensity on the track because it's that short track kind of nature. That's why they're selling out.
And that leads back to another point I was going to bring up as far as durability, running into each other and such. I think with the modern production vehicles, a lot of plastic trim would come off. But as far as the overall structure of the car, it probably wouldn't be so bad. And I invite everybody to look up on YouTube a real neat video. There you can actually find multiple edits of it from a minute long to 5 minutes long. This was done in 2009. By I believe it was National Highway Traffic Safety Association as a 50th anniversary project. They staged a front left collision, which is the most dangerous type, between a 1959 Chevrolet and a 2009 Chevrolet. And of course, the 59 looks twice as huge, and everybody thinks of those big old cars as being tanks, but the results are really interesting. The 59 gets tore up a whole lot worse than the 09. They have cameras inside the cars from every angle, and watching all the different versions is really fascinating.
They determined that the passengers in the 59 died instantly, right?
Yeah. Well, the driver, there was only one dummy in the cars, but, which by the way, the industry term for is ATD, anthropomorphic test device. The driver of the 59 would have been killed. The driver from the 09 would have either walked away or had a broken leg.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is, despite the difference in their sizes, these cars weigh within 200 pounds of each other.
Yeah, but one is energy absorbing and the other isn't. And that's the difference.
Right. Well, and modern race cars are too. They're designed to come apart around a driver.
They are.
I mean, we're clearly talking about two different classes of vehicles. And if you want to watch cars that come off the showroom floor go fast, then what you're now talking about is probably something like an SEC.
I like that answer. And, I agree with you. Yes.
Sports Car Club of America, I believe, just to make it official.
It's official.
For those of us who didn't go to Auburn.
or we're in the industry. Some of us actually, and no disrespect to SECA, because Sports Car Club of America does a phenomenal job, but sometimes it was simply can't comprehend anything.
Oh, I wish I'd had that. We just did an episode with a friend who was really advocating for SECA. And in fact, I don't think it's gone live yet. It'll be either next week or the week after.
And that was mostly aimed at the sanctioning body people, the scrutineers. It was those kind of guys.
Yeah.
Now, our friend Tim Rogers did an episode with us sort of extolling the virtues of SECA and saying that there are things that the everyman can do with their car in a relatively safe and organized way. And that's the SECA. But I wish I'd had that acronym when I did that episode with him, because that would have just been too funny. So, all right. So, Leanne, can I ask you four questions?
Sure.
My questions for you are, what is your dream car?
Well, it depends on whether you want something very Saturday night or Sunday afternoon. It's like, you know, you have different shades of lipsticks for different types of evenings. And I'm sure all the males understood that analogy right away.
Absolutely.
But you wear red on Saturday night, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one of my favorite all-time cars is an Auburn Speedster, a boat tail Speedster.
Oh,
1932. Wow. It's gorgeous. It's just a gorgeous piece of art. And I love that. And so outside of that, anything small, red, and roofless is pretty good. So
small, red, and ruthless.
Small, red, and ruthless.
That's fantastic.
Speedsters is, I just love that car. That's one of my all-time favorite cars.
Yeah. All right. My second question for you, where are you going on your next road trip?
I think down the Bourbon Trail in Kentucky.
Oh, then that sounds like fun.
Yeah. Didn't anybody go? Sounds like great.
I want to go. I would definitely want to go. Have any of us done that?
No, I've been to one place along the trail, but not the trail itself.
Right. I heard some weird rumor that they don't do samples, or they do samples, or you can't buy, but you can buy. I don't know what the regulation
is. No. They can do samples. You can buy. Jack Daniels is in a dry county, and it's in Tennessee in a dry county. So you actually can't drink Jack Daniels at the Jack Daniels distillery. At least that's what it used to be. That rule may have changed by now. But they would serve you lemonade instead. And so, but all the Bourbon Trail stuff, no, you can absolutely, the Woodford, which I have done, beautiful facility. You can taste.
Yeah.
They even kind of teach you how to taste and preparing it with food. I mean, there's a lot of really hidden treasures up there between the family histories. I always like the history and things. And so the Bourbon Trail is all on my bucket list.
You know, there's surprisingly a lot of nuances to tasting liquor. Mm-hmm. People don't realize that Scotch, bourbon. My husband's a distributor, so it's really fascinating, the tastings that we've been at, but we haven't been to the Bourbon Trail yet. So it's on our bucket list.
Yeah, I've been to Woodford. It's great. My brother has done the trail, and he enjoyed the whole thing.
Well, you know, again, something on our to-do list. My third question, Leanne, is what's the most fascinating thing, besides Miss Buttercup, what's the most fascinating thing you've seen in someone's house or garage?
Well, you know, I've seen some pretty extraordinary things. You know, obviously, I think probably the greatest was 001 of Carol Shelby's Cobra.
Wow.
That that was at my office where when I worked for Carol.
Take a breath, Becca.
No.
The funny
thing is,
I think we've talked about this before, but you know, it smells like chili, right?
Oh. No, we haven't talked about that before.
Yeah. The chili packing plant was when I was with Carol, I was the series director of the Dodge Shelby Pro Series, and at his office, we were in McKinney, Texas. And the chili packing plant was in the back where there was a group of people, you know, a little line packing the things into the little chili bags for Carol Shelby's chili. And the parts for the Shelby Can-Ams were there. And most of his car collection was there as well. And all the cars smell like little chili powders that floated through the air.
Oh, my gosh. It's spicy.
Yeah. If you want to know if Carol actually owned a car, just go sniff it.
That's hilarious.
See, I thought you were going to say he was eating chili in the car and spilled some or something. He's well known that he drove his cars. He did not believe in buying a car and hiding it away. He said cars are meant to be driven.
Right.
001 was not immaculate. It wasn't. Mm. He clearly had enjoyed it. And he had a couple of other interesting cars there, but that was kind of cool to have 001 there. So.
Right. Definitely.
Very cool. All right. So my last silly question for you, because the last question is always something stupid and silly and frivolous, is if you were arrested with no explanation, what would your friends and family assume you had done?
Oh.
This is a new one.
Are we allowed to legally?
Yeah, I hadn't heard it before.
If we need to legally change the subject, we can do that. So.
Probably burn out somewhere. you know, I actually, you know that scene in Days of Thunder where they actually are on the beach, and we've been in that situation with some of the boys, but on the street where suddenly, you know, one pulls up and they're in rental cars and, you know, everybody's kind of gassing it and they're kind of drag racing it. In fact, it is a true statement that Bobby Unser can no longer rent cars from Hertz ever again. true statement.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So the guys do actually enjoy that. Never buy a car from a rental car company in a town where there's a racetrack. Don't do it.
That's
don't buy the rental cars anyway. So many stories.
So many stories.
Really? Okay. So that's pretty cool. And people, I don't think we've ever talked about Miss Buttercup, or at least not in depth recently. The pictures you sent to me look fantastic. She looks great.
I had all the credit to John Slimp of Aerographs Photography. He can come and shoot your car, but he made Miss Buttercup look fantastic. Like, you know, a bride on wedding day. She's a 1936 Ford Roadster, and she is buttercup. So
I'll share the pictures with the gang. Yeah. If you have no objections, I'll share the pictures with the gang.
Absolutely. And all credit to Sean Slimp for doing that. He does beautiful work. So
you trying to get her in print again?
He just actually wanted to extend his portfolio. So he asked if he could come photograph her. And I said, absolutely.
Oh, wow.
So
that the same one that I've seen? Is that the one, the black one, or
no? The 29 that I had, he shot those photographs for me last year in the fall leaves, and for the rest of you, that was a 29 chassis on deuce rails with a 53 Merc in it, and it was a true California hot rod. It was black, and the engine had copper tones, and it's had a magazine appearance. It was beautiful, but I sold it. Wow.
Yeah, I can't remember what you ended up naming it, but I kept saying that it needed to be Black Betty.
That's it. You wanted it something along those lines. I think Copperhead was what somebody called it in one of the magazine articles. But it's Jacksonville, Florida, having a great old time. So
okay. Excellent. I'm very glad to hear that. Well, Leanne, thanks for coming back to the show with us today. I hope we get to see you on mic more often.
Happy to be here. Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, that takes us to our next segment, which is Becca's In the News, or In the News with Becca. I don't think we formally named it yet. What do you think, Becca?
Yeah, we don't have an official. I just don't like the found on road dead or whatever we were picking
Fix
on.
Fix or repair daily. Mm. Yeah,
we could just name the section Laverne.
Laverne.
Nice.
Why Laverne?
I don't know. It's the first. It was my mother-in-law's name. There's a picture of her to my right.
Surely.
Do you have a picture of your mother-in-law hanging on the wall?
Well, it's over in the corner of my study.
I have some questions for you. I'll ask later.
I have pictures of all my in-laws on the wall here. So, of course, it's Jen's house. So that's part of it.
Well, that's a little more.
Yes. So what's
I'm concerned. I'm moving rapidly along here to other topics.
I need tranquilizers. Don't forget that.
Okay. Yes. And I do have Vicodin as well. If you want to do Dave's Vicodin and vodka, you know.
All right. News of the week, Rebecca.
Oh my goodness. Did you know that there is a flying car?
I had heard
about it. Yes.
It is the Samson Sky Switchblade that they have been working on. Rather interesting. It's powered by a turbo V4. So there is a V4 out there right now. It goes 0 to 60 in 6.5 seconds. It's got a top speed of 125 miles per hour. The reason that it was in the news recently is it had hit its required 88 miles per hour on the drag strip, which is what its required takeoff speed is. However, autoblog.com notes that sadly there were no flaming tire tracks or time travel involved with the takeoff. So unfortunately, it was sad to hear that, but its takeoff speed is 88. It can also be driven on regular streets as it's classified as a motorcycle.
A motorcycle? But
a motorcycle.
That's interesting.
So, and it's got these little foldaway wings, and I thought that was pretty neat. Now, when I used to get stuck in traffic, the thing I would visualize would be more of a helicopter. That way I could do vertical takeoffs, just pluck myself out of traffic. But the fact that there is a flying car still gives me hope.
You know, Uber's gone after that, right?
Do I?
Uber has a full program in designing a car that will do exactly that. You can actually, there's a website dedicated to it, and there's 15 companies engaged, and they're actually building terminals for it, lift stations for it, and Uber is driving that in a significant way.
Okay, so what I want to see then is the DeLorean from Back to the Future 2 with the tires that flip underneath, and the DeLorean is flying. That's what I want to see, because I have this thing for DeLoreans. I don't know why.
So how much of a runway do they need, Becca?
Well, I think we would probably have to do the math. So if they go 0 to 60 in 6.5 and they need 88 to take off, I think we would need a few more numbers in there to crunch all of it. But
somewhere between a quarter and a half.
Yeah.
At least I would think. They would need a little bit of room to do it.
I'm looking at the website, and the takeoff distance is listed as 1,100 feet.
That's about a quarter of a mile.
And landing distance, 1,600 feet.
Need better brakes.
Or a drag chute.
Yeah, probably not the best way to avoid traffic in Atlanta. There's not going to be landing on any building tops or anything.
Straight up, though. The Uber's a hovercraft model arrangement.
I was going to say, couldn't they go hovercraft? Couldn't they do
Although,
like an Osprey?
With a 67-mile-per-hour stall speed, you're probably going to want to land on a freeway anyway.
Yeah.
Well, thank goodness for the Eisenhower interstate system.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, who would have thought that, 70 years later, here we are.
I like the idea of the whole drone idea, right? Something that could just pick up vertical takeoff and landing and just deposit you where you need to be. I think that's...
Well, and that's what I always daydreamed about when stuck in traffic, which is vertically just plucking right out of it and going on.
I thought you daydreamed about having like a 20-millimeter howitzer located on the top of your car to blow away the people who are in front of you.
My daydream about that has it hidden in my front grill, actually. He thinks he's kidding. And by the way, yes, I also think about some of the James Bond stuff where I have nails or oil coming out of the back of the car. There's actually been some really interesting weapons out of, I believe it was South Africa, because of some of this stuff going on. The flamethrowers that come out the sides of the car. If someone tries to carjack you, they walk up to the door and you turn on the flamethrower.
It shoots up beside the wheel.
Yeah, it shoots up the sides.
When you think of all of those cars and gadgets that Bond had and how horribly irresponsible he was with them, doesn't it really make Q the tragic hero of all of the James Bond?
Yeah. So what's the name of the car, the company again?
It's the Samson Sky Switchblade. So the car itself is called the Switchblade.
Even though it's a motorcycle.
Well, the wings fold in and then fold out.
It's pretty spiffy. Okay. It's a pretty spiffy piece of aerodynamics.
I can't wait to check it out.
Definitely. A couple of other things. I had a story that I'm calling worth mentioning, and that's because Mustang seems to get a really bad rep for this. And there's a ton of other people that do this. It's just somebody decided it's all the Mustang. So in an article from November 10th at a car meet in Houston, Texas, the driver of a Dodge Charger was caught on video drifting out of control into a crowd of spectators. The driver of the Charger doesn't seem to be concerned that he hit people as he drives away from the scene, according to carscoops.com. I've seen numerous other articles, and yet they always forget all about them and the poor Mustang.
So did they catch the guy later on? What happened? I mean, sure, there must be witnesses or a license plate involved or something.
And it didn't say that. It just, it had a description of the car. Mm-hmm. I don't recall seeing that anybody took down the license plate or chased after it or anything like that.
Huh.
There was a note that the people that were hit did seem to be uninjured, but still, I think it'd be worth chasing him down.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree.
Those
Mustang drivers, you just can't, you know, Mustang drivers.
I'm giving you a look. I know you can't see it, but I'm giving you a look.
A little biased over there, Becca.
And my final one in a section I am calling I Has the Dumb.
Okay.
On autoblog.com, you can watch dash cam footage of a Florida man shooting at another car through his own windshield.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen this?
I think I have, but go ahead, please.
What's really remarkable is that the driver posted this video to YouTube. According to the driver, the other vehicle was driving aggressively, bumped his car, and then pointed a gun at him as they passed. So because of all of this, this driver decided it made the most sense to not only shoot through his own windshield. And I cannot seem to emphasize that statement enough. I need like asterisks and underlining and bold and all that. He shot through his own windshield and then he posted the video himself. At no point did he go, is this stupid? He shot through his own windshield.
And what would the insurance think about that? My mind is always goes to financials.
Well, yeah, you and me both. How
did my windshield break? I'm thinking, this looks like bullet holes. What's going on here? What is this video? And by the way, I think,
and they're not from the outside going in, they're from the inside going out.
Right. And I think everybody knows by now that I spend a lot of time in the insurance industry, and I will let you know, we do look at social media posts. When we get people, we do. Now, obviously, I was more on the commercial end, but still, we look for your Facebook. We look for your websites. We know what you're doing.
You know, Becca, so when you're talking about saying that, you know, what was he thinking? The term Florida man at the start of your story should answer that.
Oh, yeah.
Man, you guys are brutal. Somebody leaves the state and they're done.
Well, we're just, you know, the Georgia man headline is, I don't know. Someone did some research about that. It turns out we hear more about Florida man because they have different rules on how things are allowed to get reported down there. And so more of that stuff hits the press, whereas in Georgia, it does not. So
for all the rest of the states, let's hear it for Georgia, taking one for the rest of the team by living next to Florida.
Yeah, really.
See, funny. Usually the jokes are about us living next to Alabama or something.
I was just going
to
say that.
Hey, yes. I live in LA, Lower Alabama.
Lower Alabama.
There you go. Yeah. See, one of my favorite jokes was always, why do all the trees in Georgia lean to the west? Because Alabama sucks. But so no offense. I know we got a couple Alabamians over there. So I'm kidding.
This is the point where we invite them to give it back.
If you'd like, Becca's phone number is 1-404.
Wait, hold on. Let me see if I can remember their rejection hotline again.
I know, but you know, hey, write to us. Write to us at the thing about cars, and you know, we always fans of a good joke. So, right, Becca?
Yes.
Yes. All right. So, anything else on your desk, news desk, Becca?
Nope. I think that did it for the news desk today.
Okay, cool. Because I actually don't have listener/viewer mail today. I didn't actually solicit it this week from anybody. But what I do have is a long list that we're probably going to read from over the course of several episodes. I asked people to tell me about the worst car they ever owned and bonus points if they had cool stories that went along with that. And some of these are pretty funny and some of them are kind of mundane. So I think we'll share one or two of these each episode and we'll go back to soliciting for listener mail next week. So my friend Rob wrote, he says his worst car ever was a 1986 Hyundai Excel. Basically, it ran on bike tires, he says. He says, I remember the size because anytime I ran over anything larger than, say, a dime, I had to change the tire roadside. And he quotes the tire size here as a P155-8013. Wow. He says, performance and maintenance were so consistently bad that I'm soured to this day on Hyundai Kia products.
Wow.
Yeah. And I got to say to Rob, though, Hyundai's come a long way since then. They've changed their ethic at least a couple different ways since the 80s.
They were brand new in our market back then.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They were pure. Yeah, they were pure Econo boxes back then, and they're not anymore.
That's actually less speedy tire than my, 1,700-pound Lotus has.
No.
Wow. Although we drove a Soul a few years back, and I felt like I was driving the chassis with nothing around it, like just the car. It was so noisy. It kind of turned me off of Hyundais.
So we do have one listener question. I had completely forgotten about this one. My friend Laura wrote a question. She says, it looks like Hurricane Etta killed my car. So I'm doing some car shopping. Actually, she says the flywheel's been going bad for a while now, and it's finally kicked the bucket. I'd started the credit union loan process, but was looking at buying in December or January. It looks like that has gotten speeded up. So she wants to check in with her friends to get our recommendations for car makes that are $15,000 and under. She says she wants a sedan. She says it's got to be blue. And she's leaning towards Hyundais, Kias, Hondas, Toyotas, and possibly Mazdas. She's got a few dealerships that are browsing now via personal connections, but wants our recommendations. And she's already picked to show us. She hasn't picked to buy it yet, but she's already picked an Elantra, just by way of example, is the kind of thing that she's looking for. But I know some of you guys have stronger opinions on this whole car buying process and this time of year and stuff like that. So I'll turn that over to the gang.
Well, go ahead, Becca.
Mine was just a small thought. I was just thinking it's really hard to be picky with the color when it comes to used cars, because you don't have the whole selection that you do with new cars. Ask me how I ended up with three white cars. You know, it's the running joke. It's a little bit harder if you're looking for, you know, more of a specific idea of car. You don't get that row of colors to choose from. And I'm sorry, Ben, what were you going to say?
Well, color aside, I think my only real thought is with that choice of manufacturers, she's probably not going to go wrong with any of them. They're all, you know, good basic transportation appliances that'll get the job done. They've all got pretty good reputations.
I think also for the price range that she's in, she didn't say or list Nissan as her brand. But the Nissan Versa, the people I know who have Versas have raved about them in terms of the reliability. They're not the sexiest car by any stretch of the imagination, but she's looking for a sedan. And it's a good, reliable car. You know, one of the things I also, I'm sorry, Beck. I'm sorry, Don, go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to say, in that same vein, though, there is, on the opposite scale, a kind of sexy car. It's the Hyundai Genesis. And even though I'm not maybe a big Soul fan, the Genesis is pretty nice looking. And it's got a V6, 3.8.
Yeah, she's not going to get that under 15K, though.
You don't think?
No.
For maybe a 2015 or a 2012?
I don't know, because that's their flagship line.
You know, also, I think it don't have to look at strictly used cars, because I think, you know, the Versa new starts at 14.8, and I love buying cars at this time of the year anyhow, because you can, you know, they're trying to move late models of the last year off of the lot, and right now with interest rates being so low, the financing deals are better. Actually, the best car deal I ever got, I bought on New Year's Eve from the worst car dealer ever. But they were just so desperate to get one more sale in before they closed down for the year.
Yeah, the best deal we ever got was, I think, it's January 2nd or 3rd, because the dealers have to pay ad valorem tax
right
when the calendar year flips. But they're given like a little 2 or 3 days grace time to unload those cars right after New Year's Eve. And we got an incredibly loaded Dodge Durango in 2015 at the 2016 January 3rd or something. It was for an amazing price. And they just kept throwing. I was like, no, we'll walk. And we had a Dodge Durango 01 that they gave us like $2,800 for. I was like, wow. And Chris and I were just, oh, well, we love this car. We can walk. And they kept adding stuff. No, we'll put a bigger this in it. We'll put this in it. We'll put that in it. I was like, okay. The only thing Chris couldn't get, he wanted blue and green, and he got black. So that color is a hard part when you really are up against wanting a car. What about that Mazda 3?
You know, I love Mazdas. We've had a couple of Mazdas, and they have been really, they've just been workhorses. The funny one, we had the Mazda 3, I think, is a good practical car. It shows a little, I think, starts at like 16,000. But again, you know, if you're trying to get buying a 2020, that they need to get off the lots, they're probably going to be much more price flexible.
Well, and two, that, you know, the fact is that the best way to actually buy a car from a financial standpoint is to buy new and then drive it till the wheels fall off.
Right.
You know, don't keep buying, or, you know, which is kind of what I've done.
I think for her, she just needs to decide how long she can wait. I think the later it gets in the year, the better the price gets. I was wondering if she didn't have to, like, right, some of us aren't driving, but for leisure right now.
Yeah.
And if she didn't have to drive right now, I would wait a little bit longer.
I agree.
Just to get that very end of the year inventory on any lot. Or look, I actually buy my cars from friends who buy really brand new cars, and I say, I want your car when you're done. Maybe she can, for a friend that's selling. I've done it twice from the same person. We're starting to call them the Dunn Eichenberg car lot.
I also ought to think about what it takes to maintain it, because not every place can work on Hyundais, but everybody can work on a Honda.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's that kind of thing.
True.
And then when you get to that luxury line, well, let's just face it, a Mercedes part costs more than some of the cars, you know. The whole
car. Right.
Yeah. You have to think about the cars and maintenance, because that's where the dealers make their money. It's not on selling the car. It's on the maintenance. So.
Right.
It's on fixing the window that will not go down in the convertible.
Yes. Well, as Don had mentioned off the recording earlier, use Uber if it's available. Use other things if they're available until the end of year clearance deals start popping up.
Yeah, I think that with rideshare and with delivery, you can make your $15,000 go a lot farther if you can bargain and get it, you know, later.
Okay, I will tell her that. So you're going to love this. I was going to save this for next week, but my friend Zareen wrote on the worst car you ever owned. She says the worst car she ever owned is a 74 Ford Pinto in puke yellow green color that you had to let run for 20 minutes just to warm it up. So just to warm up the transmission before it would go into gear, it would not go into reverse at all. And you had to start, you had to park it facing out at all times or have people push it. She says, I was broke and in school, so I couldn't afford another car. Good times.
It sounds like somebody broke that car.
Yeah. I know somebody that had a Z car like that too.
My brother's first new car was a Chevy Vega that had the exact same performance profile. And the additional benefit of being the only car that actually rusted in the showroom.
Wow. Oh my God.
But you know what?
The air oxidized it?
That's terrible.
Sorry, Becca, go ahead.
No, a car we never talk about, and I think maybe next week, maybe I need to do something on that. We never hear about it. It's the Maverick.
Yeah.
One ever mentions the name Maverick ever. And I don't know why. I liked the Mavericks. Also, Torino doesn't get mentioned.
Well, put Maverick on your list, Becca. Put that on your list. That's yours next time.
Oh, the Grand Torino.
Yeah.
Well, there was a Torino and then the Grand Torino.
So
and,
in response to Zareen's post about the Pinto she had, the puke yellow, green, yellow Pinto, someone else pointed out that they didn't deserve the fuel tank fire jokes as much as they got. It says this, and I can't remember who said it, so forgive me, but they say, in spite of all the legends about exploding Pintos, these cars really did not suffer from fuel tank fires much more than other rear drive vehicles that had the gas tank between the rear axle and the bumper. She says the problem was the infamous Ford Pinto memo, which resulted in Ford taking a couple of big public relations black eyes by appearing not to care about Pinto passengers getting burned to a crisp. Next thing you know, everybody knows someone who died in a Pinto explosion.
Mm-hmm. Plus, there were the, what were they called? The side saddle gas tanks of the pickup trucks that were having issues as well around the same time.
For a hot second, when I was in college, my roommates had a band named the Flaming Pintos.
Nice.
All right. So let's, unless anybody else has anything else to cover really quickly, let's wrap the episode with Grand Tribute Auto. Is that cool?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes.
Excellent.
Yes.
So our question for the day is, how many Land Cruisers did Toyota sell in its first year in America? Was it one? Was it 12,874? Was it 128 or 1,287?
I want to go with one.
Leanne, as our guest, what do you think?
I'm going to go with a couple of hundred there. That 100.
128? 128. Ben, how about it?
I'm really torn between those two answers.
Well, Don's deep in thought here.
God, I am deep in thought. I think this is a trick question. So,
isn't it always?
Because I'm a statistic person, and I'm thinking, if they sold hardly any cars, then why would they keep skimming into our market? Or did they just beef up their advertising really great and then they started selling? But the Land Cruiser is not a really super popular vehicle.
Not.
So I'm going to go for a few hundred.
Okay, a few hundred. Dave?
I'll go with one.
One. Well, Toyota Motor Sales USA Incorporated was formed in 1957, establishing its headquarters in a former Rambler dealership in Hollywood, California. Sales began in 1958 and totaled a modest 288 vehicles. 287 of those were Toyopet Crown sedans and one Land Cruiser.
Yeah.
See, I knew it was a trick question.
Yeah.
I like to go for the trick answers. Yeah, so
that's it. Good job, you guys.
I got to get out of my head. That's what it is.
And as an interesting aside, I saw one of those 58 Toyo pets in a museum a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting to kind of contrast with where they went since then. And, they really didn't take off in this country for many years.
Yeah. I that's what's fascinating. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks, you guys. I think this is another good episode. I clearly have a heavy editing job in front of me today. So, but as always, it's the highlight of my weekend, and it's good to see you. So thanks to our listeners for joining us. This has been The Thing About Cars. We hope you and yours are doing safe, and we'll see you in it with another episode in roughly a week. Take care, you guys.
Bye.
Get out on the road. Look at the fall leaves.
Bye, all.
Yes. Bye. Bye.
Listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.